Hello and welcome to Torati Mecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Alana Glatt, and today we will be studying Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Zayin, Chapter 17. Yesterday, we watched along as Shmuel carried out the commands of Hashem, albeit with extreme caution, to anoint the next king of Israel, David HaMelech. We also learned that as soon as the special Ruach of Hashem, a spirit of courage and strength from Hashem, entered David HaMelech, the Ruach HaKodesh that had been within Shaul departed, leaving him with a tremendous void that for now was being filled by David HaMelech, soothing him with the melodious sounds of his harp. Today's Perek, Perek Yud Zayin, features the incredible and famous story of David and Goliath, David and Goliath, a story which has become the ultimate metaphor for any time an underdog attempts to take on a more powerful opponent. Amir Tashem, in our learning of the story today, will try and weave through the 58 beautiful and intricate psukim to try and paint a fuller picture as to the grandness of this fight, grabbing gems and life lessons along the way. We'll also, Amir Tashem, begin to get to know our newest hero, David HaMelech, on an even deeper level, who we will now follow closely through the rest of the Sefer. Our Perek opens up, Pasuk Aleph, with the Plishtim gathering up for war against the Bnei Israel in a place called Ephes Damim. Hearing that Shaul, the Jewish king, was no longer the same strong and dynamically fearless leader that he used to be, the Malbim suggests that the Plishtim thought they would now finally have a good chance to get even with the Jewish people. And so they jumped at this opportunity, and they boldly gathered their army right in the middle of the lands of Yehuda at a spot called Ephes Damim. Pasuk Bet. Still somewhat involved, albeit in a more passive capacity, Shaul mobilized the Jewish army for war against this imposing threat, and the Bnei Israel now encamped opposite them in a place called Emek Ha'elah. Pasuk Gimel. Each side stood on a mountain facing the other one, with a valley between them. Deep imagery of the large divide between the two enemy sides, and also symbolic of the large leap of faith that's going to need to be taken in our Perek to overcome this fearsome and imposing threat. And now, Psukim Dalet through Yudbet, Goliath, the fearless, frightening, and overpowering general of the Plishti army, steps onto the stage. Goliath, from the Plishti city of Gas, was a towering figure. Gav ho sheish amot vazaret. He stood at a whopping 6 amos and 1 span tall, a staggering 12 to 13 feet tall. Just for some perspective, most regular apartment ceilings are 8 feet high, so Goliath was the height of a floor and a half. He was huge. And in addition to his large size, he wore an impenetrable copper helmet on his head and a suit of armor that was made up of scales, which weighed as much as 5,000 copper shekels. And he had a copper shield on his legs and a copper neck guard between his shoulders. And the psukim tell us that the blade of his spear weighed 600 iron shekels. And in addition, his shield bearer walked before him. He was truly armed from head to toe and an incredibly fearsome and frightening enemy. Goliath arose and he called out to the camp of the Bnei Israel. "There's no point in waging a full-scale war here. Choose one man from among you and let him come down and fight me directly. If he can somehow fight and kill me, then we, the entire Plishti people, will become your slaves. But if I defeat him, then you will all become our slaves and serve us forevermore." According to Rashi, Goliath was actually mocking the Bnei Israel. "I'm just one lone soldier here," who, by the way, happens to be the one that killed Hophni and Pinchas and seized your holy Aaron. "Where is your king now? Let him come and defend you all and fight me." But on an even deeper level, I heard Rabbi Stephen Przanski quote from Rav Yonasan Ibeshitz that this wasn't just a mere military strategy. Goliath was promoting an ideology. "Let the strongest man here win. According to natural rules, there's no way to overpower and beat me. I'm imposing and untouchable. Even your God has nothing against me here. Let's see you even try." Goliath wasn't just looking to fight the Bnei Israel. He was looking to challenge Hashem himself. And when no one responds, He escalates further. I have disgraced the armies of Israel today. This becomes a full-blown Chilul Hashem. And what happens? The Pesukim tell us that Shaul and all of the Bnei Israel hear all of Goliath's imposing and threatening words, and they are terrified. Absolutely terrified. Pasuk Yud Bet tells us that we are now reintroduced to David HaMelech, and we will watch along as he will become intimately involved in this unfolding story. V'David ben Ish Efrati hazeh mibeit lechem Yehuda, ushmo Yishai v'lo shmona banim, v'aish bimei Shaul zaken v'ab anashim. As we learned in yesterday's parak, David was the son of a certain Ephrati man from Beit Lechem in Yehuda, whose name was Yishai. He had eight sons, and in the days of Shaul, he was already older, advanced in years. Now Yud Gimel through Tetvav. Yishai's three eldest sons, who were trained soldiers, followed immediately after Shaul into this battle. Eliav, Avinadav, and Shammah. While David, the youngest son, bounced back and forth from before Shaul HaMelech's presence to go back and attend to his father's sheep in Beit Lechem, where he was at this current juncture in time in Beit Lechem. Pasuk Tetzayin, Vayigash HaPlishti Hashkim V'Ha'arev Vayit Yatsev Arba'im Yom. Meanwhile, Goliath, the Plishti, would step forward morning and evening, and he took his stand against the Bnei Israel for 40 long and intimidating days. Rashi, quoting the Gemara in Sota, notes that Goliath purposely came out taunting the Bnei Israel both morning and night in order to disrupt them from properly saying Kriyat Shema, which we recite both morning and evening. Our enemies know that our strength lies in our relationship with Hashem and in our ability to concentrate on our tefillah with real concentration and depth of heart. Do we appreciate this power when we open our Sidurim on a daily basis? The Medrash also points out something truly, truly interesting here. The Midrashim teach us that Orpah, who was sister-in-law with Rus, David HaMelech's great-grandmother, that Orpah had cried four tears before she departed from Naomi, a story that we'll later touch upon in Megillas Rus Mirat Hashem. And since crying weakened a person, Hashem actually rewarded her with four super strong giants as a reward. The Medrash further elaborates that Goliath was one of these four giants, and he was able to carry out this torment and taunting for 40 long days, with the Bnei Israel trembling all the while, as another reward for his ancestor Orpah, as Orpah had also walked 40 steps with Naomi before choosing to part ways, so he was given 40 days of super strength here on this occasion. Hashem pays back even small and complete actions, how much more so the mitzvos, which we do wholeheartedly and with the proper intentions in mind. Now, Pesukim Yud Zayin through Yud Tet. With Goliath busy tormenting the Bnei Israel down by the battlefront, and his sons now gone for 40 long days, Yishai summons his youngest son David, and he asks him if he can bring some supplies to his three older brothers who have been at war now for over a month straight. Yishai asks David to please bring them an ephah of toasted preserved grain, the olden day equivalent of canned food or power granola bars, which don't spoil, and 10 loaves of fresh bread to bring to his brothers encamping at the battlefield. He also sends with him special cheeses to give to the commanding officers. As parents, we always want to show hakaras hatov to those whom we entrust with our children, and who, according to Rashi, was actually Yonatan. He was the commanding officer. And he asks him, Yishai asks David, to please inquire about the welfare of his older brothers. And the pasuk says, Ve'et aruba tam tikach, to obtain a report of their welfare. According to the Radak, Yishai gave David money to give to his brothers so they could repay any pledges that they took to procure provisions while they were away and didn't have the proper amount of money to pay for it. According to a second opinion of Radak and of Rashi, Yishai actually sent David with special get kritut documents for his brothers to sign, conditional divorce papers that they used to fill out in those days to enable wives to remarry in case anything happened to their husbands in war, as his brothers had to rush out to this battle and they didn't have the proper time to do so before they left. And now Pasuk Chaf through Chaf Zayin. So David awakes early the next morning. He finds someone to leave in charge of his flock, He quickly takes the provisions that he was given by his father Yishai, and he sets out to the battle camp as the army is going and shouting out their war cry. And upon reaching the battlefield, David leaves his baggage on the side with the man who was in charge of the baggage there. And he runs forward to greet his brothers and to find out how they have been during this time. And while David was in the middle of speaking to his brothers, the imposing and ferocious Goliath stepped forward, and he spoke the same taunting words that he had been saying all of those days. But for David, this is his first time hearing Goliath's threat. And this is significant because, as we're about to see, as soon as Goliath approaches, the rest of the Bnei Israel will scatter and run away, having become used to this horrifying torment already now for 40 days. But David will have the opposite reaction. The sting of this evil Plishti's words, the palpable Chilul Hashem taking place, it jolts David to action. It's only human nature to adapt to scenarios and to become used to even unpleasant situations. But David didn't allow himself to become desensitized here. He experienced this jolting Chilul Hashem head on, and as we'll see in a few short psukim, he's going to act on it right away. It reminds me of a story I once heard of a Rav who emigrated from Europe to America. And at his first sight of Chilul Shabbos, of Shabbos desecration, he fainted on the spot. Sometimes the shock of initial moments are true barometers for sensitivities which we are meant to cultivate. And the psukim now continue. When everyone on the side of the Bnei Israel saw Goliath approaching, they ran away quickly, fleeing in terror. And they were busy telling over to one another, "Do you see that man coming out? He comes to disgrace the Jewish people. The one who kills him will be rewarded by the king with great riches. He'll also give him his daughter in marriage, and he'll grant exemption to his father's house in Israel." David, overhearing the people's conversation, asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the one who manages to kill this Plishti and remove this disgrace from the Jewish people?" And so the people repeat to him the rewards that will be granted for the one who kills him. Why is David asking the people to repeat the reward here? Didn't he just hear them telling over precisely what the reward was going to be for whoever stood up to Goliath? On a simple level, the Malbim explains here that David was asking in astonishment. What difference does the reward make here? Isn't the very act of removing this Chilul Hashem reward in and of itself? We're going to see that David's number one concern here is the disgrace of Hashem's name, and that he's riling up the people to awaken them to this fact. How come no one is standing up for this colossal public and ongoing Chilul Hashem? The Ralbag, though, offers a truly interesting approach here. He explains that although David was officially crowned as the next king of Israel in yesterday's Perek, he was actually given zero instructions or directions as to how this is going to play out. And furthermore, Shaul HaMelech was still the reigning king. How would David then even step into this new role? Explains the Ralbag, when David hears that whoever strikes Goliath will be granted Shaul's daughter as a wife and will be given great riches, he thinks that perhaps this can be his very opening to enter into this familial line of the kingship in a natural and subtle way. It's truly interesting and novel suggestion. And now, Chafchet through Lamed Aleph, the story continues. When Eliav, David's oldest brother, heard David speaking to all of these men, he became angry with David. Amida, which we learned yesterday, was an impediment to him being chosen as the king. And he said to him, "Why did you come down here? And with whom did you leave the sheep in the wilderness? I know that you just came down here to watch the fighting and get involved in all of the action." Our rabbis teach that as the older brother, Eliab felt responsible for David and his family's sheep. And he knew that if anything were to happen to either of them, he would be the one to blame. And anyways, he was right. David was not a trained soldier, and he should not really be getting involved here. Nonetheless, he should have approached him with curiosity and kindness. Anger has no place in Avodas Hashem. But then, despite being accused and spoken to with anger, David responds back calmly, de-escalating the situation. He merely responds, "What have I done now? I was only asking." And David then turns away from Eliav and continues asking the same question to another group of soldiers, gaining the same answer from them as well. This time, in addition to the other reasons we mentioned, David was also hoping that his words would reach the ears of Shaul HaMelech himself, that there was someone looking to stand up for the disgraced name of Hashem, which ultimately these words did. So Psukim Lamed Gimel through Lamed Tet. David is brought forth before Shaul HaMelech as his words reached Shaul HaMelech himself. And David tells him that he will go forth to strike and fight the Plishti. The pain of the Chilul Hashem being caused is just too great for David to bear. He will rise up with courage to fight. Shaul, sizing up the situation, he tries very hard here to dissuade David. He tells him, "You can't go fight him. You're only a mere lad. You're not trained as a soldier. And this mighty Goliath, he's been a warrior from his youth. This is not a good plan for you, David. There's no natural way that you can win here. I'm not going to send you." But David doesn't let up. He tells Shaul a story, as the Psukim tell us, of how one time, while he was tending to his father's sheep as their devoted shepherd, a lion and a bear came and carried off one of his sheep. And says David, "I bravely ran after them, and with my bare hands I managed to kill both of them, and I managed to save the sheep." "Don't worry," says David. "Goliath, that uncircumcised Plishti, who's publicly mocking Hashem, he will be just like the lion and the bear. Hashem was with me then, he saved me then, and he will save me here too." Hearing this, Shaul finally agrees. But first, he clothes David in his own special garments of armor. But David tells Shaul that he's not used to his heavy armory, and he takes them off right away. Rashi notes that it was miraculous here, that David was even able to fit into Shaul's clothing, as we know that Shaul was head and shoulders above the crowd. Rashi suggests that it was perhaps the special oil that was poured on David while he was being anointed king that made him grow taller. Either way, David noticed Shaul's jealousy flaring as he watched his own special garments fit David perfectly, and so David immediately removed the armor, making claims that it was too heavy for him, he wasn't used to it, in order not to cause more pain or invoke more jealousy within Shaul. And now, Lamed Tet through Nun Dalet, our miraculous and famous showdown plays itself out right here and right now. David, knowing this face-off will only be successful with divine intervention, he nonetheless takes with him a weapon as his means of hishtadlus to accomplish this very task. And so, he picks up 5 soft, smooth stones from a nearby stream. The Radak notes that these 5 stones represented the 5 books of Torah that Goliath was disgracing, and he put them into his bag. He took along with him his slingshot, and he marches forward towards Goliath to take on this giant once and for all. Meanwhile, Goliath, preceded by his shield bearer, began to approach David. When Goliath sees who the Bnei Israel chose to fight him, he feels a bit slighted. "You chose to send this small red-headed lad to come and fight against me, the mighty Goliath? What am I, a dog, that you come to fight against me with sticks?" He nonetheless plunges forward, ready to attack David and to win this duel. But David courageously responds to Goliath, "You come against me with sword and spear, but I have come against you in the name of Hashem, who you have defied. This very day, Hashem will deliver you into my hands. I will kill you and cut off your head, and I will give the carcasses of the Plishti camp to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the earth. All the earth will know that there is a God in Israel." David here is showing unparalleled bravery as he's truly fighting for Hashem, and he believes that Hashem will now be with him as he takes his next steps. And as Goliath now plunges forward towards David, David quickly took a stone out of his bag and he slings it at Goliath. The stone somehow managed to penetrate Goliath's copper armor and strike him directly in his forehead. The Radak points out that as David said the words to Goliath, that he'd feed him to the birds of prey, Goliath looked upwards to see if there were any birds hovering above him. And it was at that millisecond of time that he was looking upwards that a bit of his visor moved upwards with him, and David managed to strike him in his forehead in that precise millisecond of time. Clearly divine intervention. And that miraculously, the Psukim continue, that instead of falling backwards like we would expect, if someone's hit in their forehead, they would fall backwards, Goliath actually fell face down onto the ground, onto his face, on the very mouth that had cursed Hashem. in his scaly armor, mirroring the image of his very own god Dagon when it fell face forward in front of the holy Aron Kodesh earlier in our Sefer. Goliath here falls down face forward in front of David. Having no sword on him to complete the task, David runs forward towards Goliath and he grabs his sword. There are actually interesting midrashim that teach that the sword was lodged stuck and that David couldn't remove it, but that Goliath's arms bearer, whose name was Uriah HaChiti, a character that you're going to get to know in Shmuel Bet Emir Tashem, that he actually released it for David, and that Uriah, this arms bearer, subsequently converted to Judaism. Interesting midrashim. David, either way, however he got it, he grabs the sword, he plunges forward, and he cuts off Goliath's head. And when the Plishtim saw that their mighty warrior was dead, instead of turning themselves over as slaves to the Bnei Israel as they had promised, they ran away and scattered in fear. And now the Bnei Israel managed to pursue the Plishtim all the way to Gai, to the gates of Ekron, and they struck down many Plishtim and looted their camp. And David, our incredibly brave messenger of Hashem and hero, he now took Goliath's head and brought it first to Yerushalayim, and he put Goliath's sword in the tent of the Mishkan in Nov, a detail which will unfortunately be very relevant soon. And he then continued to bring the head of Goliath to Shaul out of honor for the king. And our parak ends off Nun Hei through Nun Chet on a rather interesting note, that when Shaul sees David's bravery in going out to fight the Plishti, instead of praising David or thanking him for stepping into this role that needed to be filled, he instead turns to his head general Avner and he asks him, "Whose son is that young man, David?" Avner says he doesn't know, so Shaul commands him to find out. And when David returns to him with Goliath's head in his hand, Shaul asks David himself, "Whose son are you, young man?" And David answers him, "The son of your servant Ishai from Beit Lechem." And that's how our exciting perek ends off for today. Shaul knew very well who David was, but now seeing with his own eyes David's incredible successes and remarkable divine assistance, he's starting to become extremely suspicious of him. Could this David, who clearly has Hashem in his side, possibly be the next king of Israel whom has been anointed in my stead? Could he be from the family of Peretz, who it was well known that the next king of Israel would one day come from? The ending of our perek today now begins to plant the seeds of the extremely complex dynamic between Shaul HaMelech and David that is going to begin to unfold in our upcoming prakim. For today, though, we can walk away appreciating this grand Kiddush Hashem that David HaMelech managed to create by standing up to the evil and pernicious Goliath, not allowing his torments and Chilul Hashem to continue. And we can ride the waves of the incredible Nisim that Hashem performed for David, who will become the progenitor of Mashiach. May his arrival come speedily in our days. Thank you so much for learning this parak together. Today's parak is dedicated to the safety and peace of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. May the words of Nach uplift us and give us strength during these challenging times.